When I was in Hyderabad, made a little visit to Warangal, they had their Rath Yatra. And meeting the Rath Yatra was something like out of a comic book. An Indian band dressed in uniforms that didn't match at all, in one of those rickety old things that have sound systems that come out, and one guy wearing sneakers, another guy playing drums, you know, dressed like he's a, I don't know, anyway, dressed weird, and playing keyboard, Mahamantra melody. Then you have the guy doing the, playing the drum set. You have the, it was really funny. You know, they have these nice lapel things, and they're all drooping off, and wearing sneakers, and long mustaches, unshaven faces, really looking sloppy. Hare Krishna. They had to pay somebody to do it, too. I don't get it. Okay. Back to Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 13. Excuse me, Canto 1, Chapter 13. Sutta is explaining what did Yudhisthira Maharaj say when he saw that Dhritarashtra and Gandhari were gone. He went to Sanjaya, saying, "Oh, Sanjaya, where is our uncle who is old and blind? Where is my well-wisher uncle Vidura and mother Gandhari, who is very afflicted due to all her son's demise? We know from," this is chapter 13, "we know from chapter 9 that after Grandfather Bhishma passed from the battlefield, left his body, the Pandavas immediately, their next thing was they made their way to the royal palace to then pacify Dhritarashtra and Gandhari." And do you know what that scene was like from Mahabharata? Very pitiable scene. And the ascetic Gandhari, she lost her temper. You know, she's normally very, very controlled, but she didn't keep her control. She unleashed her tempest of anger. She first unleashed her tempest of anger upon Bhima. I can't remember, maybe it was Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira, Bhima, then Krishna. Which he said respectively, I can't remember which was first, Bhima or Yudhisthira. I think it was Bhima first. Bhima spoke back. Said, "Because your sons were warned." So he spoke words that she couldn't deny. "Your husband and your sons were warned that their activities were so sinful and so against the codes of religion that surely the whole dynasty would be destroyed. Again and again they were told. And had Yudhisthira not checked me, I would have done this long ago. And so forth and so on. And you know it, Gandhari. You're a knower of religious principles as well. Your sons were engaged in heinous activities again and again. It's very fitting that they died in the battlefield, because now they've ascended, having died in the battle like this, in the presence of Krishna. She checked her anger. Then she turned to Yudhisthira. I think it's that sequence. There would not have been a battle had it not been for you. Your younger brothers, and Bhima in particular, but none of them would have fought if you hadn't given the okay. And so Yudhisthira, being Yudhisthira, said, Mataji, whatever you've said is true. However you want to punish me, I'm ready to accept it. I'm the most sinful person. I'm filled with grief over the loss of lives, all on my account. So however you want to admonish me, I accept it in advance, Yudhisthira. Something like that. And because of his humility, she checked her anger. And then she turned to Krishna. Yudhisthira would not have consented except for your wishing this fight to take place. So as I have lost all of my sons, I curse you that you will lose all of your family members similarly in a big battle. And she gave some number of years, how many years it would take place. And having spoken that way to Krishna, she immediately checked herself. But it had been spoken. You know, as the appreciation of Gandhari is presented here, an ascetic is never disturbed by all kinds of sufferings, and that makes him strong and determined in the path of spiritual progress. Queen Gandhari is a typical example of an ascetic because of her marvelous character in many trying situations. She was an ideal woman as a mother, wife, and ascetic. And in the history of the world, such character in a woman is rarely found. Well, she lost it on Krishna. She checked with Bhima, checked with Yudhisthira, and she lost it on Krishna. Which we can understand, that it was Krishna's plan. Even with Gandhari. I mean, Gandhari wasn't like a Mahabhagavata pure Vaishnav. She was a great ascetic and a great faithful and chaste wife, but she normally would never have, as an ascetic, it was out of character for her to do like that to anybody, and particularly to Krishna. But it was part of the Lord's plan that Krishna upheld her words, which was also part of his plan that the members of the Yadu dynasty be withdrawn. They had come at his request. His pastimes were due to finish. So this was induced by Krishna to withdraw them from this world. The commentary later in the 10th canto explains this, that the future generations of the members of the Yadu dynasty would, in course of time through the advancement of Kali Yuga, have produced praja that it would become Kali Yugaized or influenced by the inauspicious forces of Kali, and they would have been a scourge for the whole planet Earth. And so Krishna withdrew them before that could happen. Also, so the demigods who had taken their birth in the Yadu dynasty could return. Of course, they would return in natural course of time anyways, but time was to return. The time was to descend, and the time was to return, and it was all orchestrated by Krishna. And Gandhari was very afflicted due to all of her son's demise, just as the verse says. After that incident where Gandhari lost it, for the rest of the time she didn't. In the Mahabharata, it's described that all of the members of the... knowing that that Gandhari was aggrieved, knowing that Gandhari was very powerful, and that knowing Gandhari had uttered this curse against Krishna, they were all like on pins and needles, as they say. They were just... they didn't want to rock her boat. They wanted to keep her very satisfied and peaceful, except for Bhima. Bhima would come into the royal assembly consciously within hearing distance of Dhritarashtra, slap his arms very strongly and speak chivalrous words: "With these arms I have destroyed the rascal Duryodhana and his 99 brothers." These, you know, he would just go on. The atrocities performed by them were again and again so contrary to the laws of Dharma, they deserved to die. At the cruel hand of death in the Kurukshetra battle, he would turn to his blind uncle Dhritarashtra, who said nothing. And Vyasadeva writes, he could have said something. He could have said something to Bhima, or if not directly to Bhima, he could have gone to Yudhisthira, and, you know, his elder brother, and said, "Yeah, your younger brother needs a little bang in the side of his head. Can you take care of him? This isn't very nice." But he didn't. In part because of guilt, and the larger part because of his own attachment. He wanted to maintain his position. And Gandhari didn't say anything because she knew he was right. She felt great grief at the loss of her sons, but she also knew this is the will of providence. She was advising her husband all along, "Don't comply. Correct our son. You're the king. You're their father. This is your position." And he would go along with the ill-conceived plans of Duryodhana instead of listening to the wisdom of Gandhari. And even with that, Gandhari didn't say, "Look, either or. You do the right thing or I'm hitting the road." That wasn't Gandhari. She was very wise. But she was very, above all, very chaste and faithful. In part, her strength carried Dhritarashtra to do the right thing. You know, credit, great credit is given appropriately to Vidura. But Gandhari was the source of great strength for Dhritarashtra. Ultimately, like Vidura, who knew Dhritarashtra very well, Gandhari naturally knew Dhritarashtra very well. They're married. So she knew his weaknesses, but she also knew his strength, which is about to come out, hearing his activities. "My uncle Dhritarashtra was also very mortified due to the death of all his sons and grandsons. Undoubtedly, I am very ungrateful." We read this morning. Ungrateful, why is he thinking that? because when they came home fatherless to the royal family, Dhritarashtra extended all fatherly comforts to Dhritarashtra and Vidura, especially Vidura, but Dhritarashtra also. And he was doing out of duty, but also his affection for Pandu. So while he did this, I did that. He cared for me, and I killed his sons, grandsons. Now, in his mind is not, you know, the misdeeds of Dhritarashtra that precipitated the war. Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra that precipitated the war. And so this is the nature of a good soul, the nature of a Vaishnav. Well, two things. They're forgiving, and they forget. It's one thing to forgive, but not forget. And it's another thing just to forget. A Vaishnava, something that I read very early, like within the first month that I was a devotee, something that Bhaktisiddhanta wrote has been like a guiding light for my life in Krishna consciousness ever since. Again and again and again it comes as a truism that makes the difference between being a devotee and not being a devotee. A devotee never finds fault with others, Bhaktisiddhanta wrote, because by doing so he knows that it's only indicating, it's the indication that his own heart is honeycombed with that very same fault. Rather, a Vaishnava looks within and sees where are their faults to be improved. That is the way of life of a Vaishnava. And this is, in other words, it's a built-in dira mechanism. There's cause for disturbance, but one doesn't become disturbed because one has this other mechanism. What is there within my heart that is inducing this other person to behave this way towards me? What do I need to do to improve myself, in other words? And you know, there are gradations going in the other direction, but the full-on other direction is one never sees that one's own heart is infested with impurity. Rather, it's always the finger-pointing. He did this to me. She did that to me. Why did she, he, they speak like this about me? Why did they do this? Why did they not do that? It's always blaming, finger-pointing. Meanwhile, one's heart is so impure. So Vaishnava is not like that. Vaishnava is just the other way. And Prabhupada's comment in the purport is like that. As a pious man, Maharaj Yudhisthira took into account all his unavoidable mistakes, misdeeds. He was under order to do so. And he never thought of the misdeeds of his uncle and company. Dhritarashtra had suffered the effects of his own misdeeds by the will of the Lord. In other words, I don't have to look after this person did that bad thing, so I should become the instrument of punishing them. Never. Vaishnav never thinks like that. Another way of saying the same thing is truth will prevail. A brahmana has great trust in truth. And while there may be some confusion about what truth is in the world, there's not confusion about truth in God's eyes, then truth will prevail. I don't need to admonish Dhritarashtra for his wrongdoings. That will be taken care of by the laws of nature. And it was. Dhritarashtra had suffered the effects of his own misdeeds by the will of the Lord, but Maharaj Yudhisthira was thinking only of his own unavoidable misdeeds. That is the nature of a good man and a devotee of the Lord. Last sentence. A devotee never finds fault with others, but tries to find his own and thus rectify them as far as possible. Thus, Prabhupada is restating this statement of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which is, you know, it's our Vaishnava way of life. We don't find fault with others. There may be lots of things that are faulty. Now, there's a difference between discrimination and fault finding. We're being trained to become Madhyama Adhikari Vaishnavas, right? Where we make distinctions. The Kanishtha is not capable, the Uttama is beyond it, but the Madhyama is enjoined. You're supposed to understand God, devotee, innocent, non-devotee, or averse to, because innocent may also be in the non-devotee category, but averse to God's supremacy. And then we make distinctions amongst devotees, more advanced, peers, less advanced. We make distinctions between proper behavior and improper behavior. Devotee, non-devotee. Devotee behavior, non-devotee behavior. We make distinctions. We don't find fault. There's a difference. Finding fault is blaming, judging. This person, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And that person, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so the liking, disliking, attraction, repulsion, condemning and exonerating. But we're being trained the pandita samadarshana, at least to come to that position where we can see, here's the difference. You see the spirit soul, and you see spirit souls are equal, but then you also see there's the elephant, there's the dog, there's the dog eater, there's the brahmana. Like Prabhupada in explaining that verse, when the pundit, the Samadarshana pundit, sees the tiger, he doesn't go and embrace the tiger. He understands, oh, that's a tiger. I keep my distance from the tiger. There's a brahmana. I pay my respects to the brahmana. The one has different behaviors, but still one sees the spirit soul. That's the basis and support of the life within that body as the real identity. While making distinctions, we see the spiritual identity. And if someone is caught in a suffering condition, it's due to their misdeeds. We don't condemn the soul, rather the misdeeds. The biblical teaching is hate the sin, not the sinner. You've heard that one before. It's not the soul, but there's a good behavior, bad behavior. We make distinctions about behavior. But souls are good. Otherwise, how can one be a Vaishnava and have compassion upon anyone other than another Vaishnava? That's not how Krishna sees things. And we're being trained to see things as Krishna sees things. Shastra Chakshusha. Jnana Chakshusha. We're being trained like that. So how does Krishna see? He doesn't see this person is my friend and that one is my enemy. Na me dvesho sti na priyaha. That's Krishna. Now Krishna certainly he sees the difference between the suras and the asuras. He sees distinctions, but he doesn't have this is my friend, that's my enemy. There's an important distinction between discrimination and blaming, fault-finding. I think it's an important distinction because when that behavior falls into the territory of devotees of the Lord, it's one of the offenses against the holy name. You know, this is their primary association. So such tendencies may easily come out. This person has these weaknesses, but they have these strengths, but that weakness. And then we just, you know, meditate on that weakness. And then our relationship with that person goes to, I don't want to talk with them because they have that weakness, or something like that. Or you just vibe them, you know, you give them a cold attitude or something. That's not Vaishnav. Not Vaishnav. Maharaj Yudhisthira is showing us the example. What to speak of somebody that has a weakness? Look at Dhritarashtra. He's not even thinking. Yudhisthira Maharaj, never thought of the misdeeds of his uncle and company. Never even came into his mind. What did come into his mind was, my poor uncle. How much suffering. He lost all of his sons. I was the instrument of that. He's feeling sorrow in his own heart and wanting to uplift himself from that. The Ashvamedha Yajna that was performed was to relieve, one of the effects of an Ashvamedha Yajna is that it relieves the reactions even of killing a Brahmana. So he was so concerned. He's Vaishnav. Important lesson. This chapter is filled with so many important lessons. So many. When my father Pandu fell down, means he died, when he died, and we were all small children, these two uncles gave us protection from all kinds of calamities. He's not mentioning the calamities that were caused by Duryodhana and acknowledged, consented to by Dhritarashtra. They gave us protection from all kinds of calamities. They were always our good well-wishers. Well, a few exceptions. Anyway, the poison and the arson and Draupadi and a few exceptions, but gambling match, exile, taking their kingdom, few exceptions, but always our good well-wishers. Alas, where have they gone from here? Now it's Sanjaya's turn. Now this is very interesting. You know, it's like character portrayal. When Dhritarashtra was gone, what was the consciousness of Yudhisthira? Vaishnava. How have I been the cause to this suffering of Dhritarashtra? Because they were both, he and Sanjaya, were unaware of, you know, the sadhu program that happened the night before. They weren't tuned into that channel. They were snoring. But while they were resting, something happened. Prabhupada writes, the inner vision of Dhritarashtra had been awakened by Vidura. So they didn't know that. So we just have seen Yudhisthira's response. Now here's Sanjaya's response. Because of compassion, Sanjaya was caring for Dhritarashtra under the arrangement of the royal family, and even more specifically under the arrangement of Vyasadev. Because Vyasadev, well, he was the biological father of Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. So he became their spiritual master. And you know, so he's around, coming and going, but he's around. When the Pandavas returned, he proclaimed, these young men will all live long lives and will be great kings. And it's on the basis of his making that utterance that Vidura, when Bhima didn't come back after the sporting event but had been poisoned, he consoled Kunti by saying, he'll come back. Vyas said. And anything that Vyas said can never be wrong. Just hearing from Vidura. Another cultural point, but when one has great faith in a very capable person, just hearing from that person, it's shelter, it's safety. All cares and anxieties and mental disturbances just are gone. Now one can have such association, not have such strong faith, and not have that relief. But when one has, and I've seen it, just a short statement like that. So, big time personal concerns, just having strong faith and in qualified persons and having very close personal relationships with those persons, great resource. Can save one from all kinds of unnatural and unnecessary disturbances caused by the swirling of the material energy, which it's always doing. Just one gets uplifted and gets shelter. So, Sanjaya was a disciple of Vyas, and Sanjaya was assigned to look after Dhritarashtra. And he had a very deep relationship with, as Gandhari did. He understood the inside and outside of Dhritarashtra. He was a constant companion. He knew his feelings, he knew his moods, he knew his temperament, he knew his high side, he knew his low side, he knew everything about him. And so he was attached, but he was also very compassionate. So because of compassion and mental agitation because of attachment, Sanjaya, having not seen his own master, Dhritarashtra, was aggrieved. So much so he could not even reply. He couldn't speak. He was like stunned with intense feelings. Sanjaya was thinking like Yudhishthira was thinking, out of frustration. He's gone. He wasn't understanding out of inner awakening. Prabhupada is writing here with enthusiastic cheerfulness. What was the phrase, does anybody remember the phrase that when Dhritarashtra heard from Vidura, something awoken in him? Pragya, right. And how did Prabhupada translate that? Pragya? Introspective knowledge. He heard, he reflected, and he applied. And the effect of that pragya was that his determination was resolute. His intelligence was fixed. It fixed his mind. And that directed his senses, and out the door went those senses, along with the fixed mind and introspective knowledge. So they didn't know that this inner vision, and so this inner vision means there's a higher purpose. There's things that are happening on this, you know, the bottom of the pyramid level, you know, the senses and the sense objects, and I like this and I don't like that. This pleases me, that displeases me. I'm feeling comfortable and feeling uncomfortable. This person likes me, that person's my enemy, friend enemy. You know, getting tossed around by the waves of duality. That's going on down here. But the person who has sthita pragya, we read it from Bhagavad Gita this morning. It's mind and senses are under control. Senses are under control. Mind is fixed. Spiritual conception driving that living entity. There's an inner happiness. That's this, you know, happiness that comes from the person situated in goodness. Their happiness comes from within. And that is what sustains detachment. It's because it's genuine. It's not detachment out of frustration, which they were thinking it was. I'm fried. My plans have been spoiled, and so I'm just going to do myself in. What's the use? So it wasn't out of frustration. It was out of an inner contentment. So now, this is the second thing that we're hearing in this chapter about what is it that sustains the mood of detachment and renunciation. Here is one of them: inner vision, a contentment, a happiness from within. What is that vision? There's a better life than this one. Unless one is convinced of a better life after renunciation of the present life, one cannot stick to the renounced order of life simply by artificial dress or staying out of the home. Dira. Staying out of the home, I don't mind. I can live without that situation. That's not going to sustain unless this inner vision is awakened. What was the other? Can somebody recall? What sustains detachment? I'll give you a hint. It's what enables it to happen to begin with. Stabilization of such renunciation is possible only by association with bona fide saints and self-realized souls, by which one can be engaged in loving service of the Lord. So sadhu sangha. Association with a sadhu sustains. So we have to maintain our relationships with sadhus. Then the mood of appropriate detachment from undue material affinity will be sustained. But we can't just hang everything, so back to the other one, we can't just hang everything on, you know, be like children forever, and just mommy and daddy will come and clean up our messes all the time. We also have to grow up and become adults and, you know, responsible for our mind and senses and our words and our actions. And that, you know, that inner vision needs to awaken so we can carry on. That doesn't mean we can carry on. It's see you later, sadhu. It's been nice knowing you. Have a nice life. See you later. That's not the program. We continue not only in feelings of great gratitude, but feel a very strong connection to those personalities. We maintain connection with those personalities through the instructions that we've received Think about it. How is it that persons who served Srila Prabhupada are maintaining their Krishna consciousness in the absence of Srila Prabhupada? I mean, this is one way. The instructions in his books. But it's a relationship based upon acting within his instructions. That's, we're communing or we're connecting with Prabhupada that way. I think I can share this little personal experience with all of you as an example of what I just said. I was visiting in Hyderabad, and as you know, Krishna Smarana is also paying visits to the Hyderabad temple and helping the devotees there, and Arvind Daksha and Bhadra are also based right near there. You're aware of this, right? Yes? No? Maybe. No response. You know? Did you know that? Huh? Yeah. You didn't know. They're in Hyderabad. Yeah, he's there. Okay. Well, it's for your information. There's some classes. Like, the people come to their home and they're conducting, you know, under different names. They're just giving, you know, Bhakti Vriksha class or training of Bhadra's training Samatajis, and there's some Grahastha training, you know, just Grahasthas that are coming for association, and they have some formal classes. That's going on. And Krishanki's health hasn't been so good, so she's not going, and Krishna Smarana is going. And it's the devotees are, I don't know how to describe this properly, they're deeply appreciating. The temple devotees and the congregation devotees are deeply appreciating the personality that's coming to visit them and the way that he's communicating the teachings of Krishna consciousness. I'll skip the details, but it's very warm exchange, like almost immediately. So I was spending some time with Arvind Daksha and Bhadra and just saying, you know, I'm very moved by the service that you're doing here. It's really very, very nice. It's helping a lot of the devotees, and who knows, maybe I was speaking to Bhadra, maybe after some time Krishangi may also be able to come. And just by saying her name, she lit up like a light bulb. You know, she's very even mannered and, you know, very conservative, very calm person. But she couldn't she couldn't maintain it. She just, oh, she didn't make a noise. She just like lit up. Which, you know, immediately I can understand. There's within her, deep within her heart, there's very, very genuine affection, appreciation, a strong connection. What she's doing is just quietly being moved by that strong force. Just to hear her name. That's how spiritual quality can be sustained. It's not, you know, it's very deep and very genuine. It's not something that, a cosmetic that she's putting on each morning. It's in her heart. And as a result, you know, what I'm hearing from the devotees that are getting their association, they're going from, you know, anyway, they're getting completely turned around just by that association. And naturally, they're not taking any credit for that. They're saying, and then they're saying, and that's our Vaishnava way of life. But that's, so that's what sustains, just as an example. I'm happy to share that with you. So it requires, just to repeat, to for stabilization of such because renunciation is the topic. Real renunciation means connecting with Krishna. The fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that what is called renunciation is actually renunciation. And what is called renunciation is actually yoga, linking with the Supreme. There can't be real renunciation without real connection with the Supreme. So stabilization is that renunciation is the association of sadhu and the awakening of this inner vision, a better life, aside from this worldly, sensual, chasing after the carrot, the donkey program. There is another way of life. When in touch with that, there's a enthusiastic cheerfulness within that makes it very easy when some feature of duality comes along, whether it's an attraction or repulsion, to stay even-minded, even-tempered. Back to Sanjaya. So, first he couldn't speak, he just choked. Then he had to control his mind with his intelligence, wiping away his tears, and thinking of the feet of his master, Dhritarashtra, he began to reply to Maharaj Yudhisthira. He cheated me. My dear descendant of the Kuru dynasty. So it starts with respectful words. Now it's no longer the son of Pandu, it's the descendant of the Kuru dynasty, because the other Kurus are gone. Actually, they're all Kurus, because they're all descendants of Kuru. But this language, Pandavas and Kauravas, was actually started by Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. They were the inheritors of the throne of Kuru, and then the others were in another category, the Pandavas. Now he's the son of Kuru. Sanjaya, the personal servant of Dhritarashtra. My dear descendant of the Kuru dynasty. I have no information of the determination of your two uncles and Gandhari. O king, I have been cheated by those great souls. Mushita. They cheated me. I've sacrificed everything, given everything. My whole life has been dedicated to them. Never would Dhritarashtra do anything without taking my counsel, getting my... Because he was so dependent upon me. And he knew he could trust me. He knew I was his ally, his dear friend. I would only speak and act for his interest. And now he's thinking, it's a situation of frustration only. And so he didn't consult. I've been cheated. And in the purport, Prabhupada speaks about other situations where for a great cause, he doesn't deny, he was wrong, he wasn't cheated. He goes along with it, at least for sake of the particular verse, that there were other situations where for a great cause, great souls, apparently at least, cheat others. Any examples that you can think of? Those of you that have read this purport 100 times like I have. Yeah.
Lord Chaitanya, he left his home, left his wife, and at the age of 24 and 25.
Yeah. What else? Any other examples? Well, let's see if we got another hand up over here.
Four disciples.
Who?
Four disciples of
Say a whole sentence. For his disciples what? You're not sure. I'm not sure either. Four disciples of? Ramanujacharya. Something like that anyways. What other examples? Sanatan Goswami. You familiar with Chaitanya Charitamrita? What did Sanatan Goswami do? You're nodding your head yes, so what did he do? Sanatan Goswami. Gold coins. Yeah. What was the bribe? He told the guard, can you release me? I'll give you so many gold coins. And then he doubled it. And then even gave him what he could say. If the king gets on your case, you can tell him that Sanatan Goswami went to pass by the river bank and he jumped into the river with his chains on and he drowned. And I looked for him and couldn't find him. So he's gone. And you've got your gold coins. What else? Raghunath Das Goswami. What did Raghunath Das Goswami do?
He teached his priest to make arrangements for him to leave the place, leave his father's place.
Yeah, but what specific deception did he do? It was the evening time, and he and the priest were walking. And there was something that needed, some little duty that needed to be done that evening. Something related to the worship of the deity. And Raghunath Das said, I'll take care of it, you take rest. And everyone had taken rest. Whew, he took off. For a great cause. Srila Prabhupada gives his own example of a great soul who did something like that. What was the something that Prabhupada did? He left home abruptly, like Dhritarashtra, left home without speaking a word to anybody. Now normally that's not the protocol, but Prabhupada did that. And the balance is that there must be a necessary great cause. Now for this is not an open license for us ordinary personalities to do deceiving things and think in the mind, it's okay because it's for a good cause. But great souls that have great capacity may, in exceptional circumstances, do such things because it was out of character for Dhritarashtra to do such a thing. And it's not like Raghunath Das Goswami and Sanatan Goswami's life were filled with examples of deception. But to get engaged in devotional service, instead of being literally in chains or otherwise under house arrest, as was Raghunath Das, just to associate with Lord Chaitanya, engage in unmixed devotional service, that one-time event took place. So there are examples. Krishna is telling Yudhisthira to tell a lie. It's also mentioned here. Then what happened? Oh, those of you that know this chapter backwards and forwards, what's the next thing that happened? They're having this debate. Where'd he go? I got cheated. Oh, I've offended him. What happened next? Narada Muni Vajai Vina Radhika Ramana Namine. He showed up at the royal palace just at the right moment. Narada has this ability. He just plays his veena and zoom, comes in at the right moment. What's the problem? Maybe I can help you. Need a little instruction? No problem. Narada's expert. He's guided by Super Soul. Where to go, what to say, what to do, where to go next. He's just a wandering mendicant. Sannyas, wandering mendicant. With uncanny ability of such a... One of the things I admire so much about Narada, one of the many things, is his range of how he presents Krishna consciousness is huge. He's not like a cookie-cutter preacher. Everybody gets the same message in the same way. He's got versatility. He's empowered. And naturally, he's the care of the Lord's bhakti shakti. He's a shaktivesh avatar. He's in that category. So he's really got it. And he shows up at the royal palace. Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers received him properly by getting up from their seats and offering obeisances. And I'm sure they did many other things too that aren't detailed. And this is another example, yet another example, of another cultural point, which is how to receive a sadhu. Very important. When Vidura came at the beginning of the chapter, we heard how he was received. At the beginning of the canto, we heard receiving Suta Goswami. Later on, we're going to hear receiving Shukadeva Goswami. There's many other places, just in this first canto, because it's a approaching the lotus feet of the Lord principle. We're getting ample, repeated instruction. What's the qualifications of the sadhu? What are the duties of the sadhu? What's the message of the sadhu? The role of the sadhu within society? How to recognize one, how to receive one, how to receive their message. It's a great chapter and great. It's a lot of it is, there's, this message is very much condensed in this chapter because it's, this is where the focus is. There's a storyline that runs throughout, but the precept is this, instructions about sadhus. So, in the purport, Prabhupada discusses how, you know, from the sadhu position, how he sees the different candidates for receiving the message of the sadhu. Now here he's coming to the palace of great King Yudhisthira. And then he administers the antiseptic on the infection of his lamentation and also Sanjaya's. He disinfects their mood and purifies it. But he also goes to the non-devotees, Ragari, the hunter, so many people that are not at all pure. People mixed, Valmiki, even the great king, Prajini Bari, but so much fixed in karmakanda mentality. Anyway, so he even visits the palace of Kamsa. Hey, Kamsa. Guess what? Krishna's born. He's just on the other side of that river. So he doesn't restrict himself. He's very compassionate upon all, and he knows how to assist those all personalities to come to another stage. Very expert. Prabhupada writes, such confidential devotees of the Lord are very much dear to the Lord because they travel everywhere to preach the glories of the Lord in different capacities and try their utmost to convert the non-devotees of the Lord into devotees in order to bring them to the platform of sanity. And then he says, actually, a living being cannot be a non-devotee of the Lord because of his constitutional position. But when one becomes a non-devotee or a non-believer, it is to be understood that the person concerned is not in a sound condition of life. The confidential devotees of the Lord treat such illusioned living beings. This is like saying somebody is not in sound health. So the physician comes to treat the person who's not in sound health. That's what doctors do. You know, we don't have any doctors visiting here because nobody's sick. If someone was sick, we might call a doctor or go to a doctor. So the sadhu is one who goes to those who are in the category of non-devotee, or here as Yudhisthira, you know, having sentiments that are not Krishna conscious sentiments. He gives his association. With the understanding that actually everybody's a devotee. Their position may have deviated because of misuse of free will, but that can be corrected. And therefore they are most pleasing in the eyes of the Lord. And of course Krishna confirms this in Bhagavad Gita. What's the verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna confirms? There is no one more dear to me than he who teaches this message of Bhagavad Gita to others. He who actually preaches the glory of the Lord to convert the non-believers and non-devotees. This uses language consistent with the other language. Such personalities as Narada must be offered all due respects, like those offered to the personality of Godhead himself. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, along with his noble brothers, were examples for others in receiving a pure devotee of the Lord like Narada. How to receive? So these persons, this grandfather Bhishma, he was expert too. Even he was lying on a bed of arrows. He received everybody in such a way they were fully satisfied. He couldn't even get up and do anything. He just lie there. But they were fully satisfied. Because it's it's quality that may be satisfying, that will be satisfying, even if one does say this and do that. If the quality of consciousness is not genuine, it's not satisfying. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, "Oh, godly personality, I do not know where my two uncles have gone, nor can I find my ascetic aunt, who is grief-stricken by the loss of all of her sons. You are like a captain of a ship in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination." Thus addressed godly personality, Devarshi Narada, greatest of the philosopher devotees, began to speak. So it's not just he said appropriate words, you know, he got out his cookie cutter and he cut out the right cookie that gave him the cookie that says, "Oh, great sage." He was speaking his heart. Again, it's the emphasis I'm making is it's not just a behavior, it's consciousness. And he's also Narada is the philosopher devotee, but Yudhisthira Maharaj is also very clear in his understanding of what's the role of a sadhu. What the role of the sadhu is like the captain of a ship on a great ocean. I mean, you may have a fantastic craft, but without a fantastic captain, look out. It's a death trap. Because the captain, just like on the ocean, there's the rule. It's what the captain says, that's it. It's like he's an autocrat. The captain says, just like on an airplane, that because I fly a lot, they don't like play it up, but it's the understanding is, if the captain says, like somebody doesn't do something, they say you're supposed to follow all the posted signs and follow the instructions of the people on the aircraft. And if somebody that's on the aircraft that doesn't follow the instructions of the staff, the head guy comes and says, you know, the captain wants you to buckle your seatbelt. He wants you to sit down when it's time for landing. You sit down right now. You know, it's like court-martial. It can be, you know, I imagine there's laws that say if you don't follow those instructions, you can be, you know, criminally punished. Because in situations like that, people have to obey. The captain has the weight of responsibility to get the boat or the plane or whatever it is from this destination to that destination safely. And everything can be nice while everything's, you know, nice. But when it's the certain times when everyone's got to obey, like military law, and you go AWOL, you go off of the instructions of the military command, and you're in jail just for, even if you don't kill anybody or, you know, you don't break any other law, you just don't follow the command of the commanding officer, it's punishable. So it's a fitting, the captain of a ship in a great ocean. The great ocean is material existence. And you may have a good ship, but if you don't have the rudder and a captain that knows how to use the rudder and the wind and the whatever are the other propelling things, it's very dangerous. It's a fearful condition. So we need a good captain. And Prabhupada has used this metaphor over and over again. The spiritual master is the good captain. The instructions of the spiritual master, that's the rudder. The teachings of the scripture, that's the favorable breezes. He knows how to catch the wind and move the rudder and steer the ship to the destination. Watch out for the rocks and, you know, everything. But just hearing Prabhupada say that when he was crossing the ocean, as far as he could see, just all directions, it was water. You know, 360 degrees, it's water. This is one of these classes at 22nd Avenue. He wanted to make a point about accepting, just as the point is here, accepting authority. So he went to the captain and said, "Where are we? All I can see is water in all directions." "So we're approaching Gibraltar. We'll be there in a day and a half." And Prabhupada was in another thing. We're nearing the island of Crete. How did he know? You know, I just see water everywhere. So the captain took him and he showed him the map. And said, Prabhupada was explaining to the devotees in a very simple analogy or metaphor. There are other good sailors in the past. They've navigated these territories again and again, and so it's authoritative. And he's got, you know, the stars, and he's got his other instruments, and he's got the map, and he was pointing on the map. The captain was pointing, this is where we are. And I can tell that because of this and this and that. And although the inexperienced person is just seeing water, water everywhere, the captain knows exactly where they are. I was with another devotee. Another devotee was telling me that he took a he likes excitement, so he took a day and hired a craft for several years has been the prize winning craft in the whatever it is cup award, you know, race, something, you know, it's a $15 million boat. And the person that he was with, so you pay something, you pay a lot, to you stand there at the wheel and you're steering the thing, and it's got sails. So he said, in a minute and a half, there's going to be a strong gust of wind and it's going to be moving in that direction. He looked around and. But, you know, the experienced person knows just by the movement of the water and the feeling of the air what's happening. And sure enough, in a minute and a half. So he was prepared. You know, that in case the person is a goofy person, doesn't know how to properly steer, the man that owns the thing, he's ready to take over the controls. But he's training somebody for that thrill and excitement of pleasure craft. But there's a captain that knows what's going on. And so those are examples of this metaphor. Prabhupada was using similarly for spiritual knowledge, something that you cannot discern with your present apparatus. Who is Krishna? How to get to Krishna? All you see is the material energy everywhere in all directions. You need a captain. You need authoritative knowledge. And someone who has that capacity, you just accept. Because they're the captain. And that's the rules. When you're out at sea, there's a captain. And if he's a lousy captain, you're finished anyways. But if you have a good captain, you follow the good captain. But be careful selecting your captain. But that's the program. So, of spiritual life. And Narada was in such a relationship with Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was regularly just coming at the right moment to give good instruction and counsel to the Pandavas, and specifically to Maharaj Yudhisthira. There's many episodes in the Srimad Bhagavatam where just at the right time Narada comes and he instructs Yudhisthira. He was in that relationship with him. And Yudhisthira understood how to resource what Narada represented. Not just, hey Narada, how's it going? Nice to see you again. How is your Veena playing? He sees him in a different way. He sees him with proper respect. Absolute submission to the good captain so we can cross the great ocean of material existence. Perfect metaphor. Please instruct. Just like Sanatana Goswami, straw in the teeth. People think I'm a great person. Ha! I don't know what's going on. You know what's going on, and I submit myself to you. In fact, that's why Narada came, because he knew what's going on. He discloses what's going on later. He knows exactly where they are, and he tells them where they are. But don't go there, because the time it would take you to get there, he's going to be gone already. I mean, he has this capacity of being physically here, but knowing, you know, he's not limited by time and space. like we are, because he's in touch with he who is beyond time and space, who prompts from within when understandings are necessary. And Prabhupada explained like that. There's different sources of understanding of the spiritual master. One of them may be that Krishna will disclose something. Well, that's if Krishna wants to. It's not that everything that Krishna knows, the spiritual master knows. That's not the case. Spiritual master is not Krishna, but spiritual master is the intimate servant of Krishna, and whatever such representative of Krishna needs to know, Krishna discloses. Krishna can disclose it directly or indirectly through some other source or something, some indication of some kind, or directly. To carry out that confidential service to the Lord. He gives the requisite knowledge to take those who are in his charge to the destination, to the other shore. And I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking we better end class. So let's see if there's any discussion on what we've covered. Speaking about determination? Yeah. You'd like a little extra determination in your determination account? I'm sorry. Go ahead. I caught about between 40 to 50% of the words that you've spoken. I'm sure your question is very clear. I just couldn't hear all the words. Want to do the relay system? I'm a little hard of hearing. I'm getting old. It's one of the things that's going. Too many kirtans. Sorry. Discrimination. Okay.
How do act in the, when we are at the receiving end of discrimination? How do we discriminate when we are at the receiving end?
But someone is judging us. Something like that. How can we understand? I didn't get it.
How to understand it correctly?
Well, you could be asking any number of things, but what I think you're asking is, I'll start with this. There are different varieties of sources that are making discrimination. Some varieties of sources are fault-finding sources. Some varieties of sources are very compassionate sources. And let's just say it's a Narada Muni-like person who comes to visit. A Narada Muni-like person that comes to visit. And Narada Muni is able to discriminate what's going on with Yudhisthira, what's going on with Sanjaya. But it's not fault-finding, judging, condemning. It's Narada Muni. So one can, in the presence of a Narada Muni-like personality, one can your life is an open, your heart and your, you know, everything that's, that you're not, your mind, everything you're not disclosing is known already. So just be very open with such persons. Because they're not judging, their interest is your welfare. Then there's gradations, but then there's stuff that goes way over to the other side. People that are, you know, they've got an agenda. Let's say, you know, a lot depends on an individual's faith, but Ramchandra Puri came to town to visit, you know, as he was traveling, he came to visit and he focused his attention on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he began finding fault with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do? He didn't. He was the godbrother of his spiritual master. So he didn't, you know, instruct or whatever. He just took a very humble position. And circumstances moved Ramchandra Puri on. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu acted differently with another one of the godbrothers of his spiritual master, Brahmananda Bharati. Brahmananda Bharati appeared before Lord Chaitanya. He came to see him. And he was introduced as Keshava Bharati. And Lord Chaitanya said, "Where is Keshava Bharati? I don't see Keshava Bharati. Keshava Bharati wouldn't be wearing a deerskin." He was in a deerskin. You know, the renunciate who's so detached, he's got a deerskin. And Keshava Bharati could understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't approve. So he went away, and immediately he was, knowing his mind, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu supplied him cloth. He came back, then Lord Chaitanya fell at his feet. "Oh, Keshava Bharati, how nice to see you." Because he's the well-wisher, he wasn't. So it's a different position. And then there's gradations. So, Is that a touch upon your question? Especially, rather than going through the how you deal with people who are not well-wishers and all of the variations of that, particularly in the Sangha here, which is the primary Sangha of your day-to-day life, there's in the workplace, but this is where the confidential association comes. And these are well-wishers. It's not to say that as well-wishers, they're Narada Muni. They're pure, spotless, faultless, perfect, no shortcomings anywhere, and it's not the case. But they're well-wishers. And so if we interact with well-wishers in the mood of accepting their well-wishing, then we can advance together in Krishna consciousness. And then, you know, as a Sangha of Vaishnavas, it's responsibility for each one of us to be discriminating but not judgmental. And discriminating for the purpose of trying to understand how I can serve this devotee, that devotee. How I can serve them. How I can appreciate and amplify their very good qualities. That the foremost of which is an attraction for Krishna, which in this world is very, very rare and very special. How can I enhance and amplify that attraction for Krishna? And the things that they serve, just like this question that was asked somewhere about shortcomings or some bad habits, how to address them best. Vipin, you asked that question. When we interact with others and others are interacting with us, those things that devotees do very nicely. You know, that the nice decorations and the worship of the deity and the kirtan, and keeping things clean and the cooking and whatever the things that people do that are very nice, we express our appreciation for that nice service. Encourage one another in Krishna consciousness that way. And when it comes to some, if that's the frame of our Sangha, each of us, we have our shortcomings and faults and, you know, imperfections. We can try to assist one another to be a resource, to be a help, a helping hand to go further. That mood is the mood that should be encouraged. Knowing that we're less than perfect, that's not always 100% of the time going to be the mood. But if someone deviates from that mood, it's not going to be so difficult to get back on the mood again. Because that's what the community is made up of. Certainly that's how you're all being trained and guided and instructed. Is that... Workplace is another thing. You know, the class of non-devotees, specifically those that are inimical to God's supremacy, we expect fault-finding and those kinds, and envy and skullduggery and backbiting. We expect those things to happen. We don't indulge in it. We don't take it seriously. It's just part of their bad behavior. Something else. Someone else had their hand up. Yes.
What was the mood of Bhima?
What was the mood of?
Bhima.
I described it. You heard it.
In case of Yudhishthira, he was concerned that how this Dhritarashtra and Dhritarashtra came due to loss of their sons. And in the case of Bhima, he was loudly saying,
that was his nature. He was, you know, he was outspoken. He was feisty. That was his nature. You know, in one sense you can say it wasn't so nice. Even he was right in what he said. And because he was right in what he said, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari said nothing. It wasn't nice from our, you know. But, you know, he would step over being nice because he was just feisty. He didn't like when and he would act and speak strongly. Again and again. Right? So many episodes from Mahabharata. When Shishupal was offending Krishna, Bhima's hand was on his sword. Krishna... No. Bhima even became angry at Yudhishthira in the assembly when Draupadi was gambled away. He spoke harshly against Yudhishthira. Arjun checked him, and Bhima said, "You're right." But, you know, he's just a spirited person. Feisty, spirited. Chivalry. Bhima. That's how we can understand. That's Bhima. And that was all checked by Rudra's principle. He would not act outside of the instruction of his brother and Krishna. That was the control valve. He would not step over that principle. But when the principle of Dharma, or the representation of Dharma, Yudhisthira said, get him. His intense chivalry was unleashed. Yes? How can we introspect? How can you not introspect? The not introspect is just there's a pushing, an urge, and you do. And it's the quality of goodness is you consider from different angles of vision. Very carefully, very thoughtfully. Not challengingly, not disrespectfully, but, you know, so that the subject is clearly understood. And if there's some part of the subject that's not clearly understood, you ask, just like you're doing right now. And then when there's a clear understanding, then you move with it. That's part of introspection. You apply it. So behind the action is a careful thought of the implication, the outcome, the application, how to, in what circumstances, how to be respectful to others while doing. It's a mode of goodness, symptom. Pensive, reflective, not impulsive. Guided, so it's just you examine with intelligence. That's what it means. Not just react with the mind. Sure.
And so this is part of variety, spiritual variety also. So in Sanjaya's doing that also, how can we see in our actions?
What Sanjaya is doing is not very elevated. It's more me. Not very elevated. He has the disposition of a servant, but there's the expectation of rewards from that position of being a servant. He didn't even check with me. You know, something of the master. Yes. If there's some, here's the test. Service mood increases. Some feeling of remorse, like Yudhisthira, or in our situation, I've not properly applied this instruction. And everyone knows that thought. Now, if it's selfishness, then if it's material, it will decrease your devotional service. And if it's spiritual, it will increase devotional service. Pretty simple formula, isn't it? So we may have to learn how to take that tendency for regretting a mistake and learn by introspection, by examining with our intelligence, Ramesh, this is for you, by examining with our intelligence how to turn this regret principle again and again and again into increase of devotional service. It's an opportunity. Here's how you do it. this is an opportunity. I'm getting a lesson how to improve my devotional service. So now that I've understood, here's how to improve my devotional service. I'm ready. I want to improve my devotional service. So you don't stay over there. You go over there. Oh, I'm not a good devotee. Oh, I'm always making the same mistakes. Oh, I'm never going to advance in Krishna consciousness. Might as well throw in the towel. I think I'm just going to go to sleep. Me, 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 me. Instead of, okay, this is Krishna. Thank you, Krishna. Here's a message, a lesson. Let me show you that I got the lesson. I'm going to apply the lesson. Double enthusiasm. Thank you. And to really show you that I so much appreciate and I make my utmost effort, I'll never make that mistake again. Until we do it again. And then, okay, now I have to try four times as hard. It gives impetus for going further. Right? He's busy in the kitchen. Okay, I'm going to end. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai.